This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending 8th of June 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of June 2018, which this week have been edited by Heather Thorpe Tracy and me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. Your readers today are Jane Rutter.
Hello.
Albie Minns.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
The main headlines this week are Sparks Fly Over Vision Wording, Flats Fall Death Probe, and top marks as college celebrates gold award. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Jane?
Sparks fly over vision wording. Changes to a document outlining Civic Chief's vision for major changes in central Winchester cause sparks to fly between councillors debating it. Plans for how the Silver Hill area of the city could change under the Central Winchester Regeneration Project were widely praised by councillors at a meeting on Monday. However, following a legal challenge, the wording used in the Draft Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, was altered, with should becoming may, requires becoming expected, and must becoming could, to name a few. As previously reported, Council Leader Caroline Horrell revealed at a meeting last month that there had been a legal challenge, but that it would not adversely affect the scheme, following advice from lawyers. Details were limited, but Councillor Horrell said the upshot of the dispute was that the framework could not be too prescriptive and needed to be flexible. She said the council legal advice was that their SPD was robust and defendable. Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd questioned that at Monday's City Council Overview and Scrutiny Committee meeting. He said, "Are we about to accept weaker language than that in our local planning document? I think we need to look closely at ourselves in terms of openness and transparency. I think we have fallen short. One of the things residents would want me to be doing is make sure the language is as strong as it can be within the law. What can we see this legal advice? When can we see this legal advice? Will we see this advice?" The changes were defended by Councillor Horrell, who described herself as a cheerleader for the project, and Council Chief Executive Laura Taylor, who said even if the legal letter had not been received, the council would have taken legal advice. Other councillors on the committee also defended the scheme, with one accusing Councillor Todd of trying to score brownie points. Councillor Linda Gemmell said, "I deplore the political points scoring that has gone on," while Councillor Eileen Berry added, "I would say brownie points scoring has been done tonight and it saddens me." The draft SPT received support from both sides of the political divide at the end of the meeting. Former Mayor and Conservative Councillor David McLean said, "I think it's a fantastic document." While Lib Dem leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "It's been a fantastic consultation exercise." However, Councillor Thompson did add, "It's a shame it had to be so watered down." Previously scheduled to go before Cabinet for approval last night, the draft SPD is now expected to be approved on June the 20th. And there's a nice picture of Caroline Horrell, the leader of the council, as cheerleader, it's headlined.
Flats Fall Death Probe. The county's senior coroner has called for a report into the failings of addiction services after a Winchester man fell to his death from a window at his city centre flat. Dr. Nigel Malloy died from severe traumatic head injuries after plummeting headfirst from his second-storey flat in Southgate Street, an inquest heard. The 56-year-old had a long history of alcohol misuse and depression. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how the retired GP had become addicted to painkillers which were prescribed to him by a doctor in Northern Ireland for chest pains. Mr. Molloy, who had previously run a practice in Manchester, had moved to Bangor to help look after his elderly mother. His niece, Jilly Jones, said that she believed Mr. Molloy blamed himself for his mother's death and that he used alcohol to numb his chest pains and grief. The court heard how his sister brought him to live with her in Winchester after finding suitcases full of empty spirit bottles in his Bangor home. In a previous incident in May 2016, Dr. Molloy fell out of the first floor window of his sister's home, causing severe head injuries after being left alone at home for 4 days. Ms. Jones said that she had found 20 large bottles of spirits in the property following the incident, as well as parcels of painkillers. Dr. Molloy had been referred to the Inclusion Service for his alcohol dependency, but his family have slammed the service as not fit for purpose. Ms. Jones said if the NHS and Inclusion had fulfilled their roles, Nigel would be alive and well today. In the alternative, if Inclusion's role is not as the NHS believes, then there is a critical services gap, meaning that the government, NHS and Secretary of State for Health fail to comply with their requirements. Senior Coroner Graham Short said that he could not know how Mr. Molloy came to fall out of the window, but that he did know that Mr. Molloy was drunk at the time and that the previous incident indicated a pattern of behaviour. Mr. Short recorded a narrative conclusion that Mr. Molloy died after a fall from height in circumstances that cannot be confirmed. Mr. Short ordered a prevention of future death report as he agreed with the family that opportunities to intervene and provide care and support to Mr. Molloy had been missed. The Chronicle has reached out to Hampshire Hospitals Trust and Inclusion for comment.
Top marks as college celebrates Gold Award. A Winchester college is celebrating after receiving a prestigious award for the quality of its teaching. The University Centre at Sparshot College been recognised with a Gold Award from the Teaching Excellence and Student Outcomes Framework, TEF. The University Centre, which offers highly specialised land-based degree programmes from foundation level up to master's, received the awards for the quality of teaching and consistently high levels of student satisfaction and success. The awards, now in their third year, are administered by the Office for Students, the new regulator of higher education in England. Introduced by government to recognise excellent teaching and inform applicant choices about where to study, ratings are determined by 6 core metrics based on teaching, academic support and progression to employment. Principal Tim Jackson said, "Outstanding teaching, excellent support and progression to further study or employment are the cornerstones of Sparshot, and these are the criteria we are proud to be judged against. These are also the criteria important to students when choosing where to study, and to have these acknowledged to the highest possible standards by the TEF demonstrates that the expert teaching team's outstanding resources and facilities deliver outstanding outcomes to our students. The expert TEF panel, comprising of leading academics, students and widening participation experts, praise Sparshot for its clear focus on the needs of students and high levels of pastoral and academic support." Tim Jackson added, "Our university centre reputation is firmly based on quality teaching, outcomes, high levels of employment, with outstanding links with the industry. It was very rewarding to see that the panel noted the excellent employability of students.
In addition to our excellent teaching and industry links, University Centre Sparshort exists on the incredible campus with first-class facilities. Sparshort College is renowned for its specialist facilities for students seeking to work with animals, the land and the environment. The TEF Gold Award will apply for the next 3 years. And there's a lovely photograph of a group of people holding up banners with TEF Gold on it, and three of them sitting on the ground in what looks like a lovely meadow that has a path mowed through it with University Centre Sparshort.
That concludes the headline stories, and now we'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, my Winchester, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Beadle, David Beadle, passed away peacefully in his sleep on 28th of May. Dennis, Grace Dennis, on 27th of May, peacefully at home, aged 73. Dowland, Patricia Ann Dowland, unexpectedly in Bristol on May the 29th. Hillier, Henry George Hillier, peacefully on May the 28th. Marsh, Paul Marsh, suddenly on April 23rd, aged 66. Pierce, Sandra Catherine Pierce, peacefully on May 25th, aged 71. Richmond, Alan James Richmond, suddenly on May 25th, aged 83. Rudland, Shirley Ann Rudland, on May the 30th, aged 73. Varney, Janet Varney, peacefully on June the 2nd, aged 85. And Ward, Anthony Allen Ward, known as Chubb, on 23rd of May, aged 83. Now, Jane has the Christian comment.
Being politically correct in prayer. And this week's Christian comment is from Rosemary A. Baker. I recently read an article on political correctness in worship. To tell you the truth, I hadn't actually ever considered this. I expect I would have noticed if I had heard somebody using language in worship that was not politically correct, or at least I would like to think so. But as to whether I actually ever use something inappropriate myself, I've no idea. My days of being marked or appraised are long past. Interested in what the Methodist Church, my denomination, had to say, and whether they offered any guidance, I looked at their website and found nothing directly about the subject. I then interrogated the section on leading worship and some introductory documents, but again, no mention. Lots of examples of suitable prayers, but no mention specifically. There were, however, lots of items of interest that I have saved for future reference, and who knows, future articles. Applying political correctness to leading prayer, it is not surprising to find that talking about God can be a minefield. Some do not like power language, so that means the term Almighty could be a problem. Others want gender-neutral language, so one should avoid the pronouns he and she. There are other problems to avoid, and wording may need to be altered. For instance, is it better to say compassionate God, or should one say God of compassion? Indeed, is it appropriate to attribute human emotions to God? It was in 1975 that the term political correctness was first used. Nowadays, we often hear that something is not PC. In the article, it was mentioned that President Donald Trump was someone well known for not being PC, especially on his Twitter account. He is not alone in this, and even some Christian groups, usually by literally interpreting scripture, have caused a great deal of hurt to different, usually minority groups. This has fostered discrimination and even rejection of some groups. Women, members of LGBT groups, ethnic minorities, and those with disabilities. It has allowed the church in the past to support slavery. It has permitted us to turn a blind eye to many things that we now know are wrong. As Christians and followers of Jesus Christ, we might ask ourselves, what would his approach have been? Jesus challenged all the time the attitudes and opinions of the teachers of the law and the leaders of the faith community, because they were wrong. He risked everything, quite literally, by standing alongside the minorities and excluded of his day, and shows us the way to behave and speak. He was able to do this because he knew the scriptures, now in our Old Testament, and that they do tell us how to behave differently. The prophet Micah, chapter 6, verse 8, tells us to treat each other with kindness, with justice and humility. This is, I believe, what Jesus would do.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 836. Or emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 14 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Albie.
Yes, this letter comes from John Miller of the Old Vicarage, Bishop Sutton, Alsford, under the heading, A Sad Loss for City. Sir, festival goers in Hampshire will share my feeling of loss at the death of John Julius Norwich. When I was running the Winchester Festival, we were lucky enough to welcome him in 12 of those 14 years, giving his brilliant illustrated talks on the richly varied subjects of his many books, from Venice, Byzantium and the Popes, to Shakespeare's Kings and the English Country House. He never failed to draw a full and appreciative audience, and never let us down, even on the occasion when he endured a difficult, interrupted flight back from a family wedding in the Caribbean, which took him 24 hours the day and night before his scheduled appearance in Winchester. When the Alsford Historical and Literary Society asked me to host their 50th anniversary festival in 2016, the first person I called was John Julius, inviting him to come and talk about his new history of Sicily. "Of course, dear boy," he said. "It will be just like old times." Then he captivated that audience too. I always look forward to receiving his annual booklet, Christmas Crackers, which became hugely popular over the years. He was a great writer and speaker, and a wonderfully charming friend over many years. He enriched all our lives and will be much missed in the cultural life of the nation.
And this is from Tony and Monica Westlake. Sir, your statement, the design will unite the city's sports facilities around the new leisure centre at Bar End, Chronicle May the 24th, is incorrect. Staying at River Park are the tennis courts, all-weather football pitch, Riverside Bowls Club and presumably the skate park. It was evident from the meeting on Friday, May the 18th, that the council is determined to press ahead whatever the consequences, presumably because the finding from the outside sources, hopefully these won't fall through at the last minute. The big issue with the proposal is access to the Bar End site, with the only suggestion for access to the leisure centre being using park and ride buses for the number 4 bus, only a small bus, 15 to 20 people, running once per hour. This will leave all the people north of the city of Winchester, except those in Teg Down via number 4 bus, without any easy access to the new leisure centre, leaving them with the only option of driving through the city or catching 2 buses. Parking is limited at the new leisure centre. At the meeting, we raised the issue of what will happen to the very successfully run over 50 years sport and fitness club held twice a week. Will people still be able to attend when they need to catch 2 buses, bearing in mind that the bus pass will only allow people to travel after 9:30? We receive no answer to this query. The council needs to rethink the access to any new leisure centre. And that, as I say, was from Monica and Tony Westlake of Courtney Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
Search for family. And this letter is from Brian Hall in Calvia in Spain. Sir, I am searching for any family of my late wife. We tried to find family many years ago, and though too late for my wife, our children are missing an entire side of their family. My wife's father was Henry William David Gough, G-O-U-G-H, born July the 17th, 1912. He met and married, after the war, a widow named Alice Amy Pomeroy, née Cornelius, who lived in Chingford with her three boys. As a family, they emigrated to Adelaide, Australia, where they had a general store. My wife was born on December the 30th, 1956, and named Diana Ruth Gough in Queen Victoria Hospital, Adelaide. The marriage failed, and the father was left in Australia with Alice, returning to England with the four children, Diana being 1 year old. I have no idea of what happened to Henry, Ness Harry, though I am told there was possibly a sister to my wife by a different mother. Whether she was born before or after Diana, I do not know. Henry was born in Bishop's Waltham to David and Annie Louisa Gough, who lived at what I think is the Chase at Bishop's Waltham, David being a farmer. It would be nice to discover any history missing for my children, but also any issues to do with health, as one of our children is severely learning disabled and my wife succumbed to breast cancer at the age of 47. Please get in touch with any information. Many thanks. And you can email him, that's Brian Hall, at hobbit19@hotmail.com. That's email hobbit19@hotmail.com.
And now a letter from Phil Gagg of St Swithin Street, Winchester, headed Great Step to Green City. Sir, it was good to read that Winchester City Council is now taking a major practical step towards cleaning up pollution and traffic blight in the centre of Winchester. Chronicle, May 31st. The proposed car park at the Voltex site in Bar End stands every chance of persuading drivers to park a little further out of the centre and reduce congestion. It will be popular with a delightful walk to the centre along the river or through Kingsgate. It is especially good that, as Councillor Warwick says, this purchase is part of the City Council's commitment to make Winchester cleaner, greener and less congested. With careful implementation of an integrated plan, Winchester City Centre could become a much better place for everybody through lower levels of pollution throughout the centre, benefiting the health of those who visit or live or work there, more space for walking, a wider pavement on City Bridge that would let people linger safely to enjoy the view and allow extra care home residents to access the centre. More pedestrianised areas, such as the square, a better balance between people and traffic in Bridge Street and at the junction of Drury Street and High Street outside Barclays Bank, a quieter Drury Street and a St George's Street shoppers will no longer want to avoid. Better safety routes for cyclists. A large open market in Broadway, uninterrupted by traffic. An end to bus delays and parking spaces freed up for cars displaying blue badges so that people with reduced mobility can park closer. Local people will have an opportunity to look at how the Winchester Movement strategy could contribute to Councillor Warwick's excellent at the free event about air pollution and health at St Peter's Pastoral Centre. It takes place between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on June the 21st, Clean Air Day. A vastly improved Winchester is within our grasp.
Pain research. Sir, chronic pain can have a profound effects on the quality of life. Researchers at the University of Southampton are inviting individuals to participate in a study examining how chronic pain affects the processing of pain-related information. Individuals aged between 18 and 70 who experience chronic pain are invited to take part in. We are also recruiting pain-free individuals as a comparison group. The participants will complete a series of simple computer tasks followed by some questionnaires assessing their emotions and pain characteristics. The study involves attending one session at the Pain Research Laboratory at the University of Southampton. If you are interested, contact me via email on kr2ul7@soton.ac.uk. That's kr2u17@soton.ac.uk, and that's from Kamani Radhakrishnan of the University of Southampton.
More bins needed, and this is a letter from Julia Mattock from Gordon Avenue, Highcliffe in Winchester. Sir, I don't usually walk my dog on St Giles Hill at 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning, but the weather is hot and humid, so I went out early. I noticed that there were a lot of bottles and picnic rubbish by the viewing point. I guess people were enjoying the lovely weather, relaxing with their friends and looking over Winchester. The bin was overflowing. Some people had put drinks mugs on top of the full bin. There was just too much rubbish. I went back to my car and got rubber gloves and a big plastic bag. I picked up all the rubbish that wasn't in the bin and took it to Winchester Recycling Centre, which is nearby. I would like to ask the council to provide another bin at the viewing point so that there are two bins. The extra rubbish I found wouldn't have filled another bin, leaving space for picnickers' rubbish for today, Sunday, too. Other bins on the hill had rubbish in, but the greatest concentration of use was by the viewing point. It's not much to ask for another litter bin. That's from Julia Mattock.
A letter from Sally Penton, Downlands Way, South Wanston. Sir, I echo Robert Fowler's frustration with Winchester's Planning Committee, Chronicle May 31st, whose dubious decisions include the Silver Hill debacle, routing a main road through a housing estate, and possibly approving a totally inappropriate development in the small market town of Alresford. These people have quite a lot of power to affect the lives of local people, yet seem distant, disinterested, and complacent. Recently, a public meeting was held in South Wanston to discuss the woefully inadequate bus service to the village. This meeting was ignored by all our councillors. Not one of them attended. This really is not good enough. We need new blood in the system to show people change can be positive and even simply listen and engage with their voters.
Judith Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester writes, proper scrutiny. So I'm hoping to hear the City Council's overview and scrutiny committee give a thorough examination of the tepid, watered-down document that has emerged from the enormous consultation process on Central Winchester regeneration, Silver Hill, after I sat through 70 minutes of presentation and low-level debate on the cost of the proposed leisure centre. I'm struck that even with a Lib Dem chairing overview and scrutiny, while the majority of members are from the ruling party, not much actual scrutiny is likely to happen. The Deputy Conservative member's scrutiny consisted of telling officers at length how wonderful the leisure centre scheme was. But what drives me to write this is the management contract that is proposed. A chosen company will be given a 15-year contract with an option to extend for a further 5 years. There has been some disquiet that the contract for the existing River Park hasn't been re-tendered for very many years. Unsurprisingly, therefore, little investment has been made. The company that will run the new centre may or may not be the same one, but surely it would be sensible to have a break clause in the contract in case anything goes wrong. A 5-year contract extendable for a further 10 years would be a reasonable bet. Now the Cabinet will rubber stamp this in a few days' time. As for Silver Hill, the planning document was so watered down on the basis of legal challenge that isn't allowed to be seen, even by other councillors, that developers, even on the 80% of the site that WCC owns, will be able to do almost anything. The chief executive assured the Lib Dem objectors and the public that the top legal advice had been taken and the changes were all absolutely necessary. Perhaps she can't be expected to have learned from the previous Silver Hill fiasco, as she wasn't there at the time. But she doesn't seem to have read the case papers. Top legal advice was obtained then too. It didn't stop the Lloyd Jones review finding that the council had behaved improperly. And that was from Judith Martin.
This letter is from Patricia Walker, Ullswater Grove in Alsford. Sir, there is not a need for another industrial site in Alsford. There are many units vacant both in Alsford and Winchester. I think any employer would rather be in Winchester, where road and public transport are readily available, than in Alsford. Obviously, if an industrial site were to be made in Sun Lane, it would create a blot on the landscape. The proposal to create an exit on the A31 by way of a roundabout is an extremely expensive project and would slow down traffic already frustrated by existing links. Looking to the future and anticipated increased congestion on the M3 and M27, traffic will be seeking an alternative route, which is another reason to stop the unnecessary creation of an environmentally damaging roundabout. I don't think Seawards has thought about the reality of an extra 320 households in Alsford, the existing proposals of traffic going down Sun Lane, Titchbourne, down a nursery road would cause a complete bottleneck at certain times of the day. I'm having to leave home for work earlier and earlier due to existing traffic in Alsford. The occupants of another 320 properties would get down Sun Lane. They had no idea how narrow the road that exists onto East Street is. Alsford is short of parking spaces, and this is likely to be made worse by the possible withdrawal of approximately 100 spaces at the station. Where are the probable 640 additional cars going to park? I suggest that no more than 60 homes are built on Sun Lane. The employment zone is eliminated, and a new road from the development alongside the railway line and exiting onto the B3047 is built. And that letter was from Patricia Walker in Alsford.
Jeremy Mortimer writes from Harrow Down Badger Farm under the heading Little Benefit. Sir, despite the headline statement of an extensive network of cycle and pedestrian routes, including the potential connection to National Cycle Network 23, there is little of real benefit in the latest proposals for users of the Bar End Leisure Park, whether they be pedestrians, cyclists, or public transport users. If you live in Winchester, access is generally going to be more difficult than currently is the case with River Park. Access may be improved for some coming from outside Winchester, particularly from the M3. Current users of River Park should be asked and ask themselves how they would travel to the proposed leisure park. From observation, there are many users who currently walk or cycle to the leisure centre. I fear that many of these will now drive to the leisure park to get their exercise. A group of users whose needs are frequently ignored are teenagers and young adults. How are they to access the leisure park without mum and dad's taxi service? Attractive and well-designed cycle routes could provide part of the answer, together with frequent low-cost bus services running into the evening. This is not an insoluble problem, but it is apparent that so far insufficient thought has been given to the leisure park's users' transport needs. We are promised a transport impact assessment in due course, and it is to be hoped that this will identify solutions for all modes of transport and not just consider traffic congestion. It would be unfortunate if the leisure park created more traffic at a time when we are being encouraged to get out of our cars.
Listen to our plea. So I refer to Robert Fowler's letter in last week's Chronicle, in which he draws attention to the destruction of the environment and quality of life for residents in Alresford should the proposed roundabout off the A31 bypass gain planning approval. I, and over 300 to date, other residents, have registered objections to the madness of this developer scheme, which is intended to give access to a huge industrial estate proposed for Sun Lane. In order to construct this roundabout, which will be situated only 100 metres from nearby housing, the existing earth protective embankments will be bulldozed, along with thousands of trees which were planted by Hampshire County Council to absorb noise and the vehicle pollution. Pollution levels will rise to above government acceptable levels as a result. There is little doubt that the housing is needed, especially affordable homes, but there is no demonstrated need for an industrial estate. A roundabout will encourage much traffic to use this as another way into the centre of Alresford, and will find themselves stuck in congested, narrow residential streets. The residents' lives and those of their children for generations to come will be ruined. The roundabout and the unnecessary industrial estate should be scrapped and concentration given to the housing for which there is a need. Planning committee, please listen. Paul Dix, Titchburn Down, Alresford.
Not a disaster. This is a letter from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Colden Common. Sir, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, is right. The disestablishment of the Church of England would not be a disaster. Separation from the British state would be the Church's salvation. The Christian calling to care for the vulnerable and the poor and the weak is common to most religions. It is also incompatible with the state's neoliberal economic doctrine of the past 30 years and foreseeable future. A separation may be the impetus required to make more clerics speak out against injustice and truly fulfil their calling. And that was from Jeff Naylor.
And the final letter comes from Robert Barnes of Elizabeth Place, Winchester. And he heads a letter, Reasons for Bias. Sir, there are three main reasons I suggest for the public's snooty, near disdain of engineering that you discuss in your excellent leader, Chronicle, May 31st. The first was publication of Sir Isaac Newton's Principia Mathematica in 1680, which caused Cambridge University to declare that there was no need to teach any more science. Newton had said it all. The university sat on its bum until 1886, when Vice Chancellor Cavendish woke it up. In that resultant 200-year gap, the educated great and good, without any science, laid the foundations of our modern government and society on theology, Greek, Latin, pure mathematics, and the rest of the arts. Our government makes bad engineering decisions, as the country is still technically backward. The second reason is that universities, having established themselves and their departments at the turn of the 20th century, moved in on the engineering institutions' councils and in 1967 replaced the exams with their own degrees. The result was causing the majority of working professional engineers who had come up through apprenticeships, night school, etc., to become disillusioned. Lastly, in 1977, Prime Minister Jim Callaghan, who had served as a marine engineer during the Second World War, appointed Sir Monty Finiston, chairman of British Steel, to conduct a thorough 3-year investigation into the profession. Finiston reported to Thatcher in 1980, who, on the advice of Sir Arnold Weinstock of GEC, an economist educated at LSE, rejected his recommendation that a new statutory register of engineers be established as a matter of urgency. Anyone can practice and call themselves an engineer without registration. In Germany, they can't.
And as a postscript, this letter is how appropriate. Sir, I have just read a feature on Sky News website entitled "We Must Accept the High Street is Dying." How appropriate that the feature had as its background a photograph of Winchester High Street. And that was from Robert Jackson of Ashburn Crescent, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you to all our correspondents. There's no letter from Westminster this week, so we'll go straight on to your say. Cadbury Dairy Milk has been crowned Britain's favourite chocolate bar. We asked readers for their favourite bar, and Jane has the answers.
So, in your say, James Rosier, 20, sociology student from Winchester, said, "Cookie Crumble Galaxy, I could eat it until it came out of my ears, but I find it too smooth to eat in large quantities." Mm. And then there's a lovely picture of a young lady, Izzy Sharp, 25, who's an assistant administrator from Winchester. She has bright red hair. And she said, "I do like all chocolate bars, but I do prefer Galaxy. It's just smoother." I think she's been listening to the adverts. Then there's another picture of a lovely lady called Nikki Cobby, 38, practice manager from Winchester, who says, "I only eat Cadbury chocolate. It's been my favourite since I was 2. My parents used to buy me one and I still buy a bar now." So she agrees. And Paula Thompson, 38, another young lady with lovely long brown hair, a full-time mum from Winchester, said, "Cadbury is always my favourite. It's just addictive. I do have it quite often. I like it because it's creamy." And I think I agree with her.
And now we're going back through the mists of time for historical news items from our files, starting 25 years ago, read by Albie.
Yes, 25 years ago, Friday, June the 4th, 1993. Kingsworthy villagers will renew their tooth and nail fight against a proposed 300-home development at 4-day planning appeal in Winchester next Tuesday. Winchester City Council leader John Taylor rallied the opposition at Springvale Hall public meeting last Thursday in preparation for an appeal lodged by the developers Lang Homes. For over 30 years, K Kingsworthy residents have fought off successive attempts to build on an agricultural site at Woodham's Farm, Springvale Road. Langholm's attempt to build on the 63-acre site will be the fourth such proposed development for the site over the past three decades. A unanimous vote against the plan was recorded at the meeting. Paul Underhill, chairman of the Parish Council's Planning Subcommittee, said the outcome of the proposed development would now rest in the hands of a new Secretary of State for the Environment, appointed just a few hours before the meeting. Addressing the 80-strong gathering, Mr. Underhill said, "Before today, the minister was Michael Howard, but from this lunchtime, it is John Selwyn Gummer." Bracket, loud gasps from the audience of, "Oh, no!" Close brackets. "I leave it to you to decide whether or not we will be successful with that man in post." The Queen is among a trio of royal guests making a joint visit today, Friday, to the Adjutant General's Corps at Worthy Down near Winchester. Attending in her capacity as the Corps' Colonel-in-Chief, she will be accompanied by the Duchesses of Kent and Gloucester, who are Deputy Colonels-in-Chief. During their five-hour visit, the royal party will attend a service of dedication to commemorate the relocation of a memorial rose garden from WRAC Training Centre at Guildford to the Winchester Army Base. After lunching in the officers' mess, they will meet past and present members of the Corps and its association and watch displays at the annual Corps Day. During the visit, the Queen will also inspect the Guard of Honour, unveil a recently commissioned portrait of herself, and present a golden lanyard to a woman lance corporal who has completed over 1,000 free-fall parachute descents. The royal party is expected to arrive at 11:20 a.m. and will leave shortly after 4 p.m.
And what about 50 years ago, Norma?
Saturday, June the 8th, 1968. Immediate steps are to be taken by Hampshire County Planning Committee to remove roadside stalls which do not have existing use rights and are a highway danger. At their meeting at Winchester on Friday last week, the committee approved a three-point plan to deal with the strawberry stall hazard. This included removing roadside advertisements which spoiled the countryside amenities and caused a traffic hazard, and the long-term provision for alternative sites for the sale of strawberries near principal traffic routes in the country. The County Planning Officer, Mr. A.J.D. Smart, reported that a survey of strawberry stalls in rural areas showed that there were a total of 70 stalls and that most of them were mobile. The stalls caused the highway obstructions when drivers stopped suddenly or swerved across the road. In addition, the stalls and their accompanying advertisements were generally of a low standard of design, and particularly when they were in close proximity to one another along a stretch of main road. They had a harmful effect on the appearance of the countryside. Of the 70 stalls, the county surveyor regarded 23 as being actually potentially dangerous, and a further 16 stalls had no adequate parking facilities. A resolution protesting against the county council's cut on the road maintenance is to be forwarded to the council. Mr. G. Corner proposed the resolution, which objects to the county council's decision not to carry out any grass cutting and to reduce salting of the roads by the winter by a fifth. Mr. W. G. Brock, vice chairman, said, "We feel that grass verges will soon become very dangerously overgrown. This is essential work. The machines are there. The men are there. It can't be all that expensive."
And Jane will take us back 100 years.
This is Saturday, June the 8th, 1918. There was a large attendance of officials connected with the War Savings Movement at the Council School on Tuesday evening to discuss arrangements for holding War Weapons Week from July the 1st to the 6th. The Reverend E. Copson Peake, Chairman of the District Committee, proceeded and in his introductory remarks said it was hoped the idea would be carried out all over the country by the various War Savings Committees. The amount to be raised varied according to the results of past efforts, and it was gratifying to know the Alsford area had done well in the past, so that the quota required was £2.10 per head of the population, compared with £5 in other parts. This meant that £19,000 was required in 1 week by the sale of war bonds and war savings certificates. Private Donald Turner, son of Mr. and Mrs. Turner, Broad Street, has been awarded the Military Medal for his gallant conduct whilst in action in Palestine. He was in some hot fighting and distinguished himself by capturing 5 German prisoners and a machine gun single-handed. The following day he was again in action and kept his own machine gun at work without assistance.
And 200 years.
Yes, two items from 200 years ago. Monday, June the 8th, 1818. First, the mayor and corporation, with a few friends, on Thursday evening, celebrated the anniversary of the birth of our venerable and afflicted monarch at the George Inn. Mr. Paulet St. John Mildmay, on this occasion, announced his intention of offering himself as a candidate for the representation of this city in Parliament. A select party celebrated His Majesty's birthday by a dance on the bowling green at the back of the Globe Inn in this city, a member of which issued tickets to their friends for the occasion. The evening was spent very happily, and the arrangement of this little festivity reflects credit on the loyal promoters of it. And the second item. We understand that the patronesses of the asylum established in this city for training young women for domestic service, as well as for inculcating on their minds the principles of religion and morality, have lately received a £3 banknote from an anonymous friend to that excellent charity.
And now, Norma's going to take us through an alternative look at the news in Belgarum Diary.
Now, there are three items in this one. The first is an American in Hampshire. An American loves Hampshire so much that he's written a book about it. Exploring Hampshire on Foot is by Alan Staveley, a retired professor from New Mexico. He told Belgarum, "I'm an avid walker and hiker in the deserts and mountains of New Mexico in the US, where I usually live. I first came to Hampshire 22 years ago when I spent 6 months living in Winchester and working in Hursley. Soon I fell in love with the green rolling hills and river valleys of the countryside, so different from the arid New Mexico landscape. Every weekend I was out in the countryside exploring my new home, discovering many of the scenes I describe in the book. Since then I have returned many times, and I always seek out the more walking routes through the Hampshire countryside to destinations such as the county's most picturesque and appealing villages. When in Winchester, Mr. Staveley stays with his friend John Holder at his B&B in Colebrook Street. The book is published by Colebrook Guild and is available from P&G Wells Bookshop on College Street." And the second one is Solar Ride number 24. Winchester cyclist Jane Huff has completed another marathon bike ride. Jane, 70, rides across Europe every summer to raise money for Christian Aid. This time she pedalled more than 1,000 kilometres around Sardinia, her 24th solo ride. Jane, of ruffled close hairstock, told Bulgarum, Sardinia is very varied. Much of the island is wild and mountainous, and the coastal roads are really spectacular. There were flowers along the roads and wonderful views. There are huge numbers of prehistoric Neurai sites, like enclosed castles made of stone and constructed around 1500 BC. The Sards can appear forbidding at first, but are really very kind and helpful. There are very few cars on the inland roads, except in each tiny village where their steep cobbled streets seem to be full of local cars doing eccentric things like hooting at each other. Jane cycled just over 1,300 kilometres, including riding to Dover and getting to Toulon for the ferry to Porto Torres. Donations can be made at justgiving.com, fundraising, Jane Huff, 2018. And the last one is Don't Shoot the Messenger. Winchester's proposed sports and leisure park has proved to be one of the biggest issues taking up Chronicle news pages in recent weeks and months, a point which has not gone unnoticed by councillors. One of those councillors is Jamie Scott, who at Monday's Overview and Scrutiny Committee accused the Chronicle of focusing too heavily on the depot site and idea of building an ice rink there rather than on the leisure centre itself. It is a job of the journalists at the various council meetings to produce a report of that particular meeting. Recent meetings concerning the project have been the focus shift from the leisure centre itself to the wider sports and leisure park and its design framework, of which the depot site is a part. As such, a number of residents and campaigners spoke at those meetings about the possibility of an ice rink on the site and asked what the council has to say, which was reflected in the coverage. To borrow a well-used phrase, don't shoot the messenger.
Now we're going back to Albie for first person.
Yes, this is an article called When the Web Costs Me Dear by George Hayter. Most of us have to pay out large sums of money at times in our lives, whether it's for a new car, a daughter's wedding, or deposit to rent a flat. March 2017 was such a time for my wife and me when we paid just over £7,000 to a company which asked us to send the payment by electronic transfer. The process entailed bypassing bank staff by using internet banking to send the money from our computer at home. Most readers will be familiar with internet banking. I'm not much good at that sort of thing, but my wife is fully competent. She runs her current account from our desktop at home. Anyway, the company emailed us with the go-ahead to transmit the £7,000 and my wife typed the electronic instruction into our computer. Before she went ahead, a second email arrived. It was just in time. Apologising for a mistake in the first email, it asked us to send the £7,000 to a different account number. Easy enough to do that. My wife duly adjusted the instruction by typing in the corrected amount account details, carefully checking that the figures were all as she had been asked. Then she pressed the button to send the money. Later that day, we were surprised when the company phoned to ask when we would be sending the £7,000. They hadn't received it yet, they said. Oh dear, what's gone wrong? My wife and I asked each other. I can't remember exactly what happened next. Events became a horrible blur. We must have phoned the bank. I think we got put through to their security department. It was probably them that gave us the phone number for police computer fraud specialists. There was a sense of urgency from them and talk of moving fast before the fraudsters transferred the money from their account and closed it. Within minutes, We heard it was too late. Our money had gone. The fraudsters had closed their account. Now, apparently, our £7,000 was untraceable. How did the thieves get our money? We were told they had hacked into my email account. For days and months, they perused my email traffic. They saw an opportunity when they read the email with instructions on where to send £7,000. The forged email that they sent to me mimicked the format of the genuine email. It had a similar typeface, layout, company logo, and so on, and nothing in the wording roused our suspicions. My wife and I were tricked by an email which was nothing to do with the bank. It was our fault. We were offered emotional assistance from victim support, but turned it down. We were shocked, but not in shock. Immediate action that I did take following advice was to change the password on my email account. Readers of this article are among the first to hear of our misfortune. Up to now, my wife and I haven't told many people outside our immediate family. We were too embarrassed. I also felt guilt. I'd let the side down. I'd let criminals get away with a crime. Advice from the industry-funded Financial Fraud Action UK includes, don't assume an email is genuine.
And now, my Winchester this week is an interview with Rob Litchfield, owner of Pie Caramba. And Norma's going to tell us Rob's favourite things about Winchester.
What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Other than Pie Caramba, I really like Cafe Winchester. It has a nice atmosphere and they're always pleased to see me. They also do an amazing sandwiches. What is your favourite pub or bar? The William Walker, because they do Frontier on tap. The staff are all lovely and they are big fans of Pie Caramba. What's your favourite shop? D&G Hardware. They have literally everything you could ever want. If you ask them for plastic bits on the end of shoes, they would probably have them. What's your favourite building? Wolvesey Castle. Around the back of the cathedral, Pie Caramba helped with the big sleep out there the other day, and it was really good. What's your favourite view? St Catherine's Hill, because it is beautiful. Whenever I get the chance, I like to go up and look at Winchester. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Frank Turner, because I'm a bit of a fanboy, and he wrote one of my favourite songs about Winchester, Wessex Boy. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Clue capers. Having done many escape rooms, they are up there with the best, and they are lovely guys too. What is the best thing about Winchester? The people and its attitude towards independence, and the Christmas market. Winchester comes alive in winter and it's hard not to feel festive. And the worst? The parking. It's shocking and seriously needs looking at. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would have more shops and less empty units on the high street. Describe Winchester in a sentence. A beautiful city where old and new meet.
Oh. And editorial comment, please, Jane.
The editorial comment echoes some of those points. A tale of two cities is clear this weekend. Winchester seems to be a city of contradictions at the moment, as highlighted by the stories on pages 4 and 5 of this week's newspaper. First up is the obesity crisis, which is something the entire country needs to get a grip on. Figures show that a shocking number of Hampshire's youngsters are now dangerously overweight. The County Council has said it is taking action, but it seems much more needs to be done if Britain is to avoid a crisis of cancer, diabetes and other weight-related diseases burdening our already strained NHS. That being said, a celebration of sport is taking over the city's streets on Sunday with the return of Cyclefest, which, organisers say, is set to be bigger and better than ever. It seems strange that with Britain getting fatter, events like this are continuing to grow. Perhaps more of us should be taking part and fewer spectating. The other contrast is what is happening to businesses in the city centre. We report that independent furniture shop Pure Home has been cleared out by bailiffs after struggling to pay its bills. But on the other hand, D&G Hardware is having such success that it's branching out across the district. The vacant Jaeger unit on St George's Street also looks set to be filled in the near future. It seems for every store closing, there is a queue to open up again.
And now we've got a few things about what's on. I've got to tell you, this is a bit in advance, but it's the Royal Marines Association Concert Band, conducted by Lieutenant Colonel Chris Davis, OBE, retired, never forgotten. An afternoon of light music to commemorate 100 years since the armistice that brought about the end of the First World War. And that's in Otterbourne Village Hall on Sunday the 15th of July. The doors are open at 2 o'clock. The concert is at 2:30 p.m. Tickets are £12 unreserved but include tea or coffee. And you apply to Mary Davis, who just happens to be the mother of the conductor, the Gables Park Lane, Otterbourne, Winchester SO212HI, and you can phone on 02380 273 473. That's 02380 273 473. And Folk Festival back in town. The New Forest Folk Festival returns to Romsey next month with much to celebrate. Headlining this year's festival, July the 4th to the 8th at Powell's Farm, Platford, Romsey, are Ward Thomas, the singing sister duo, who have played the O2 Arena and the Isle of Wight and Glastonbury festivals. Other acts include Steel Eye Span, Trad R, Dean Friedman, and so on. So you can find out about that at the newforestfolkfestival.co.uk. And there are more close to home, more sooner than this. Tuesday lunchtime recitals every week, Romsey Abbey from 1:10 to 1:50. Bring your lunch or a coffee and enjoy an informal half hour or so of good music. And it's free, but there's a retiring collection in aid of Romsey music. Also, Sunday, June the 17th, Wessex Sinfonietta at Crossfield Hall, Romsey, 3:30 p.m. That's on Sunday, June the 17th. The programme features Beethoven's Eroica Symphony and Mozart's Fifth Violin Concerto, which will be performed by Tom Balk. The conductor is Nicholas Wilkes. Prices are £15 for adults, half price for children. And I couldn't resist this one. Saturday, June 23rd, Music on the Wing at the Hawk Conservancy Trust, Weyhill, Andover, 6 p.m. Unique summer musical fundraising evening. Watch birds of prey soaring overhead against the beautiful skyline, accompanied by live music from the London Military Band. So that sounds like a lot of fun. And also, I couldn't resist this either. The Winchester Morris Men are on tour. And they're going to be, on the 13th of June, they're going to be at Bishop's Waltham and then at Upham in the evenings. On the 20th of June, they're going to Warewell, Church Street, Warewell, and then Abbots Anne. At Saturday, the 30th of June, they're going to be at St. Cross Fate in the afternoon. And on the Wednesday, the 4th of July, they're going to be at Otterbourne at 7:45 and then Twyford at 8:45. So if you visit the winchester-morris-men.org.uk, you'll get more details of that. I know it's a bit quirky, but I couldn't resist it.
Are they going to dance all the way to those?
Yes, like what's his name? Kemp, who danced from London to Norwich because he had a row with Shakespeare. And lighting up time ended on Friday at 4:52 a.m. and begins at 9:17 p.m. on Wednesday the 13th. It ends at 4:50 a.m. and begins at 9:21 p.m. Days are getting longer. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem you have received with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we'll continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Albie.
An awesome idea for a fundraiser. And that's spelt O-A-R-S-O-M-E. Pub regulars will take on a team of rowers over 24 hours ahead of their 3,000-mile Atlantic fundraiser. Taking place at the Wanston Arms on Saturday and Sunday, the punters will take on the Men of Ore ahead of their rowing challenge for two good causes. Sam Bolt-Lawrence from Mitchell Dever, plus Robin Drysdale, David Wallace and Will Theakston will row from La Gomera in the Canary Islands to Antigua in the Caribbean in mid-December, aiming to raise £250,000 for Bowel Cancer UK and Combat Stress, which supports armed service personnel, past and present, who suffer from the psychological effects of war. They say they were inspired to take on the challenge following Robin's bowel cancer diagnosis in 2016 at the age of 34. But first, the team will take on 100 customers at the Wanston Arms near Winchester in a 24-hour rowathon starting at noon on Saturday. For more details, call landlord Matt Dodd on 07909 993388. That's 07909 993388, or email, and this is all lowercase, landlord@thewanston.co.uk. landlord@thewanston.co.uk. More details about the Atlantic Challenge can be found at www.menofore, that's all one word, menofoar.com. www.menofore.com.
Bishop unveils special Titanic memorial. A moving ceremony has taken place to dedicate the new Titanic Memorial. Led by the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, the service was in honour of the hundreds of Southampton residents who died in the 1912 disaster. And it took place on the same spot as the memorial service just days after families received the fateful news in April 1912, when the Mayor and people of Southampton gathered at the Church of St Mary's Street. The new window was designed by stained glass artist Louise Hemmings and features an angel rising from the waves with a scroll that says crew. She says there is one bubble for every member of the ship who died. It combines modern and traditional techniques. Also, there were families of some of those on board the vessel. John Lewis, a great-grandson of a survivor, Arthur Lewis, said he would have been tickled pink by the window, while Bob Burr, grandson of saloon steward Edward Burr, who died, said it was the icing on the cake. And there is a picture of the window, and the bubbles are blues, pinks, mauves, and they're rising up. I can't actually see the angels, but the bubbles look very effective. I actually think the light through them will be absolutely entrancing.
M3 scheme top on agenda for MP and authority chief. Major works to a notorious motorway bottleneck were top of the agenda for Winchester MP when he met a National Park chairwoman. Steve Brine met with South Downs National Park Chief Margaret Parran to discuss the changes set to be made at Junction 9 of the M3. The scheme, due to start in summer 2021, has been welcomed by Mr. Brine following years of travel misery at the Winnell Junction. However, the South Downs National Park has objected to the scheme and expressed their concern with the lack of information regarding mitigation measures or, where these are impractical, compensation for any adverse impacts on the national park and its special qualities. Following the meeting, Mr. Brine said, "I pressed Margaret to work with me, Highways England and Hampshire County Council to find a way to support the scheme, because it has strategic importance to the area, the region and the nation. I'm confident we will get their support, but fully understand they have a responsibility to ensure major work such as this doesn't detrimentally impact the national park without acceptable measures put in place. We will get there in the end." The pair also discussed the new economic profile of the South Downs, which is helping to shape future activity in the area, stretching from Winchester to Eastbourne. Mr. Brine heard how issues around superfast broadband continue to blight rural businesses and promised to raise the matter with the new digital minister. The Chronicle has approached the South Downs National Park for a comment on how it felt the meeting went, but it had not received a spot response at the time of going to press. And you'll be pleased to know there's a lovely big picture of Steve Brine MP with the South Downs National Park Chief Margaret Parran looking at the brochure for the South Downs National Park together.
Fears grow over allotment plans. Villagers have launched a fight to save their allotments, which have been put up for sale. The allotments in King's Somborne are open to offers to the Diocese of Winchester, which says the sale is necessary to boost its funds. Now campaigners have expressed their concern over the potential sale. The site in Firsdown Road has been listed as an asset of community value, ACV, for the past 5 years, and that listing ends on Sunday. That means that should it be sold prior to that date, it must remain as an allotment site. However, the diocese have said they are open to offers from any time now up until July the 18th from potential buyers. 42-year-old Lisa Johnson has had an allotment on the site for the past 4 years and said she believes the diocese is trying to get around the rules. She said, "They have a small window and they are trying to use it. I don't think they realise just how important these allotments are to the community. I have 2 young children who love it, and there are some residents here who've had allotments for the past 40 years. It's such a worry. We know development is needed, but this doesn't seem quite right. As a community group, we weren't even told officially that it was up for sale. Under regulations, an ACV must be offered to the community group who registered it, should the owner want to sell. Then the group has 6 months to raise funds." A spokesperson for the diocese said, "As a charity, we are under a legal duty to make the best possible use of our assets in order to raise money to be able to continue to support the work of the Church of England. The site is open to offers and the deadline is July the 18th, 2018. The vendors are not obliged to accept the highest or indeed any offer." They added that any buyer would have to provide suitable allotment space as an alternative site. But there was no definition on how big that would have to be. And there's the photograph of a young boy sitting on his wheelbarrow in the middle of the year's allotments, looking as though he's enjoying himself.
Chris takes on task to teach youngsters. Hampshire nature expert Chris Packham has teamed up with charity Blue Cross to promote animal welfare education in schools. The expert spent a visit at the rehoming charity in West End filming a series of clips encouraging teachers and youth leaders to sign up to free classroom talks to create a future of compassionate pet owners. The video, which were recorded at the rehoming centre on Bub Lane, included some of the centre's homeless pets and focused on teaching children in key stages 1 and 2. The charity wants to educate them on the 5 welfare needs, which includes aspects such as suitable diets and environment, enrichment and companionship. Chris said, "It is very important to me to be part of encouraging current and future pet owners to learn more about the needs of the animals they share our lives. I feel strongly that being able to encourage children in the classroom can have a huge impact for the future and how they will safeguard and protect pets and other species." Kerry Taylor, education manager at Blue Cross, said, "Chris's involvement in our education programme is invaluable to our charity, as we know that these fantastic video resources will help us reach more school children, teachers and parents to help educate about how to keep pets healthy and happy. With Chris using his passion and commitment for pets to join forces with Blue Cross, we can reach as many children and teenagers as possible, and we can improve the lives of both future pets and their owners, and stamp out cases of animal cruelty and neglect in the process. Many pets' well-being sadly suffers through people simply not knowing." The charity also commissioned polls looking at the value both teachers and parents place on pet welfare in the classroom. 90% of teachers agreed that learning about looking after pets helps children to learn important lessons about responsibility and compassion.
Store expands in district. A city centre store is expanding across the county after years of success in the city. D&G Hardware, based in St George's Street, has been established in Winchester for over 40 years and is now opening 2 new stores, with a third currently under negotiation in Southampton. Owner Toby Roberts bought stores Morgan's Hardware of Alsford and of Bishop's Waltham earlier this year and has now launched under the D&G Hardware brand. Mr Roberts, who bought the Winchester store in 2007, said the new sites were in need of considerable investment. As a result, major changes have been made to layouts of both shops. Now operating 6 stores in Hampshire, the brand has won a number of awards, including gold at the Britain's Best Retailer Awards in 2007, 2008 and 2009. Mr Roberts said, "Yes, it's tough out there right now, but we are constantly changing our offering and adapting. As other specialist stores around us close, it gives us a unique opportunity to develop our ranges even wider. We have now become a convenient local one-stop shop for all of life's essentials." He added, "Many thanks to all our wonderful customers, without which none of the above could or would have been possible." The news comes as another vacant Winchester unit looks set to reopen. National chain Cook has put branding in the windows of the former Jaeger unit, also in St George's Street, which has been empty since the fashion chain went into administration just over a year ago. The new occupier, which sells frozen home-cooked meals, currently has over 100 stores.
Queen's commendation for Winchester's Major Bullade. and I'm sure she'll forgive me if I've pronounced her surname incorrectly. It's spelt B-U-L-L-E-I-D, and I will refer to her as Major Bullaid. A Winchester soldier has been commended for her service while deployed in a war-torn country. Army officer Major Victoria Bullaid, known as Tor, serves with the Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps, QARANC, and is currently the Senior Clinical Lead Critical Care Nurse at Defence Medical Services in Portsmouth. Following her deployment in South Sudan, Major Bullaid has been recognised with a Queen's Commendation for Valuable Service, QCVS, for her contributions to medical capability between April and July last year. Her citation reads, "Victoria's contributions to operational medical capability extend far beyond her rank. She has garnered unreserved respect and admiration from every quarter of the task force, delivering a systemic clinical effect that has improved the lives of many ill soldiers, and her accomplishments are wholly deserving of national recognition." Following the award, she said, "Joining the army seemed a great opportunity to be a nurse in different and challenging places. Being awarded the QCVS is quite overwhelming. I was just doing my job, and ultimately it was very much a team effort. Without all the determination and hard work of those who deployed and those that helped us get out the door, we would not have been able to achieve it." Before enlisting and taking up her nursing studies, Victoria worked as a healthcare support worker at Salisbury District Hospital. She enlisted in the British Army in 2009, having always wanted to serve and follow in both her parents' footsteps. Her father served with the Tigers, the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, PWRR, retiring in 2010. And her mother was in the QARANC, from 1979 to 1982. Alongside her South Sudan deployment, Victoria has experienced deployments to Afghanistan.
Dads get on their bikes for school. Two Winchester dads have cycled hundreds of miles to raise money for a new classroom. The pair, Jim Blackburn and Darren Collins, both parents of St Bede's primary school pupils, teamed up to take on the 370 miles over 5 days. The bike ride began at the St Bede's Museum in Jarrow, near Newcastle, and ended in style with the whole school greeting the cyclists as they returned to the school on Monday morning. A special escort was provided during the final stage by some of the Year 6 pupils and head teacher, Mrs Duck. The bike ride is part of the new project raising funds for new eco classroom, which the school intends to use for wraparound care as a community space and as an extra teaching and learning resource. Following the fundraiser, the children have also been encouraged to take part in their own sponsored bike scooter rides. Mrs. Duck said, "We are very grateful for the fundraising efforts of Darren and Jim, and also the support from the whole school community. We are delighted to be part of the project that helps to promote physical activity, acknowledges the historical foundations of our school, and raises funds for the school in a creative and unified manner."
TV puppet smashes expectations. One of Rod Hull's last surviving emu puppets has gone to live with Orville the Duck and George from Rainbow. The puppet, which was made in the mid to late 1980s for TV production company Endemol, was bought at auction by the man behind CBBC's Hacker the Dog, the puppeteer Phil Fletcher. Mr. Fletcher from Wigan bid over the phone for the much-feared bird, and paid £8,680, including buyer's premium, when it went under the hammer at Chippenham Auction Rooms in Wiltshire. The puppet was originally forecast to sell for between £750 and £1,000. Mr. Fletcher, who also makes and collects puppets, said, "I'm 41, so I vividly remember seeing Emu on television when I was growing up. Rod Hull was one of the best puppeteers, but also criminally underrated. Because audiences totally bought into the character of Emu, they forgot that Rod was operating him.
Yes.
He was brilliant." He said the puppet will sit on the couch at his home in Wigan alongside George, the pink hippo from ITV's 1970s and 80s children's show Rainbow. BAFTA-nominated Mr. Fletcher has been operating Hacker the Dog on CBBC since 2009 and has over 30 years' experience as a professional puppeteer. Among his collection of puppets is a version of Keith Harris's Orville, used in a television advertisement for Surf washing powder, and Sooty and Sweep. The Emu puppet cost £10,000 to construct. The TV show's producer, Endemol, ultimately decided to use a different version of the puppet, so this one was kept in reserve, hence its excellent condition. Principal auctioneer Richard Edmonds said, "There was some fierce bidding over the phone and internet for the Emu puppet. Collectors and puppet aficionados clearly feel very passionately about this character. I don't think Mr. Fletcher's other puppets are going to know what's hit them when Emu arrives." The Emu puppet was sold by a private collector from Radstock.
Leisure Centre. Civic chiefs were set to sign off the vision for Winchester's planned multi-million pound sports and leisure park last night. As the Chronicle went to press, members of Winchester City Council's Cabinet were due to discuss the draft design framework for Bar End. According to the reports going before councillors, they were set to approve the vision for the £38 million leisure centre and surrounding areas, which include the Garrison Ground, KGV, playing field and the depot site. They were also due to discuss details of a planning application for the centre, due to be submitted within days. Mitigation options for the playing fields, how the operator would be chosen and how the project would be managed. As previously reported, construction of the leisure centre is expected to start next spring and to be completed in 2021, with the wider facilities being developed over a longer time frame. The Chronicle understands that there are also plans to allow pedestrian access via Milland Road, which has been a concern for residents. More details will be available in next week's Hampshire Chronicle.
Falcon fears over bid to build at quarry site. A bid to create up to 10 homes at a disused quarry has been described as unacceptable over fears that it could harm nesting falcons. Developers are asking East Hampshire District Council for outline planning permission for the Ropley Lime Quarry site in Soames Lane near Alsford. However, residents and conservationists have objected over fears for local wildlife following a critical report which labelled the risk to nesting peregrine falcons as substantial and unacceptable. Tristan Norton, senior ecologist at Hampshire County Council, wrote in a letter to planners, "I have now reached the carefully considered opinion that, on balance, the risk of the birds deserting the site altogether is substantial and that this is an unacceptable ecological impact. From my discussions with Mr. Keith Betton of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, HOS, the Ropley Quarry pair are one of only four pairs in Hampshire whose nest site is in a natural, semi-natural setting. This raises the conservation significance considerably." Mr. Norton added, Although not listed as threatened, the peregrine falcon remains an uncommon species across the UK. The population in England has only recently reached a good state of recovery following near catastrophic declines. It is thought that the falcons have been nesting at the site for the last 3 years. Among other objectors to the plans was the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Trevor Codlin, Senior Specialist for Planning and Development, said the presence of a breeding pair of peregrine falcons in the quarry is significant, and we remain concerned at the potential success of the mitigation proposals. However, defending the scheme in the statement, developer GVA said the design process has sought to minimise the impact on habitats and species found within the site, whilst also incorporating appropriate mitigation measures. The redevelopment of the site offers the opportunity to improve the ecological situation, including improvements to biodiversity and planting of native species. This would not be the first development in the area to affect the birds, if approved. As previously reported, Winchester welcomed its first clutch of peregrine falcon chicks in 3 years last month after the city's only pair nested in the roof of Winchester Cathedral. The pair had originally been nesting on the former Hampshire Police headquarters based in Romsey Road in 2011, but had to relocate after the building was demolished in 2016 to make way for more than 200 new homes. It is not known when the decision is expected, but it is possible that they could go before a planning committee on June the 21st.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 8th of June 2018. Thanks to my co-editor, Heather Thorpe-Tracy. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Jane Rutter.
Thank you, bye.
Albie Minns.
Bye.
And Norma York.
Goodbye.
And from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy, thanks for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.